All right, guys, before we jump in, I want to tell you real quick about the 0 to 100 Elite Mastermind. This is our own high-level group for serious real estate investors looking to scale fast. Inside, we share deals, strategies, and we build real relationships all to grow our cash flow portfolios. And you know what? Most members actually add 10-plus units in their first year. Plus, you'll get exclusive access to our podcast guests for direct Q&A. If you're chasing time freedom through real estate, check it out at 0to100tribe.com. That's Z-E-R-O-T-O, the number 100, tribe.com. Now, enjoy the show.
We want to scale without killing ourselves. So I think it depends on where you are in the cycle. What does your team look like? Can you take on bigger projects? Today, we can take on pretty big projects versus a year or two ago would have killed us. And so, yeah, it just depends on what team you have in place.
Being on some chips. We go 0 to 100 real quick.
Welcome to the 0 to 100 podcast. I'm Travis Dillard, and we're all about scaling a cash flow real estate portfolio from 0 to over 100 units and achieving your retirement number one, or R1. That's where passive income from real estate replaces your day job and gives you complete time freedom, which is the new currency of the rich.
This is Gabriel Hamill. Here at 0 to 100, you will not hear us talk about house flipping, spec homes, wholesaling, or land banking. We are only about achieving time freedom through buying and holding cash flow real estate. So remember, if R1 is the destination, real estate is the vehicle, and cash flow is the gas. Now go out there and buy some cash flow real estate.
I'm Mitchell England, and I'm thrilled to have you on board. With our combined real estate holdings valued over $100 million, learn from us and others who've achieved time freedom through cash flow real estate.
And everybody, welcome to the 0 to 100 podcast, where we are all about how do you scale to over 100 units and achieve time, geographic, and financial freedom. And how do you do that? You do that through the vehicle of real estate with truly passive income. We're not going to be talking about buying flips, land banks, developments. We're talking about long-term hold, cash flowing real estate. And everything we look at is through the lens of time. The three of us have done that. Some of us are smarter than others. Gabe figured it out early on and scaled fast and lives an amazing life. Mitch and I, who are inferior in mental stature and physical stature, we sort of bumbled around for 20 years trying to figure it out like a couple of jackasses. And you know, we figured it out. We read a lot of books, went to a lot of masterminds. That's where we met Gabe, hung out with smart people and figured it out. And now we scaled over, I don't know, 400 units. Hit R1. We call that R1. And by the way, so we put together like a framework. This thing's called the R1 framework. It's how we did it. Gabe followed a lot of the same principles. It's all about how do you get in? How do you go from zero to something? How do you leverage equity to parlay into bigger deals, more cash flow? And how do you gain momentum there? So that's what we're all about. And that is, that's my intro. So is that what we talked about? I think I did a lot better than you could have.
Yeah, that sounds good. I thought we were just doing like, welcome to 0 to 100. Let's buy some real estate. Let's go.
Yeah, I didn't know it was going to be like a lecture.
Okay, hey, everybody. Welcome to 0 to 100. This is Travis Dillard. Let's quit being bitches and buy some real estate.
All right, perfect. I like it.
Yeah, okay. So, hey, man, what have you guys been up to? I know, where the hell is Mitch at? It's like, where's Waldo? Where the hell is Mitch? Actually, where the hell is Gabe? You guys are like, I'm in Wisconsin. I'm in Austin. I'm in Maui. So let's start. I guess I was in Palm Springs for the last two
weeks. You want to start with location? Is that what you're trying to, you're just asking us as friends. Like, where are you in the world? Is that what you're asking?
No, you're like, where are you? Yeah, because I was in Palm Springs for 2 weeks. Mitch is in Wisconsin and he's bouncing around. Gabe had way more fun than all of us. And
I was in Maui for a week with my family. Flew there with my wife and two kids, spent a nice week in Maui, a lot of just relaxing beach time, pool time, went over to a friend's house for Easter, a lot of real estate investors there, a lot of real estate investor friends on Maui, which was nice, but mostly just family chill time. I flew back to the States with my family. They came home. I went to a high-level mastermind meetup in Austin, and then I met up with my GoBundance pod in Dallas, which we also did a bunch of cool stuff. One of my good friends, one of my GoPod members, played in the NBA for 13 years. He took us courtside to I don't follow basketball, so I hope I get this all right. He took us courtside to Dallas Mavericks versus the Warriors. We didn't.
The Dallas Blue Dogs.
Blue Dog, yeah, yeah. We did a meet and greet with Steph Curry and Chris Paul. Ran into Steve Kerr. Ran into Mark Cuban.
Mark Cuban, that's a picture I saw. That's one I was most impressed with.
Yeah, that was
cool.
Awesome. Yeah, it was a super fun night, but honestly, like, the highlight of that was really to just hang out with my buddies, like, and my friends, and we all like to do really cool shit, and no matter what that cool shit is, we try to do more and more of it. And then my wife and I are headed off tomorrow morning, so 3 a.m., we are taking off. We rented an entire private island. We're going there with 11 other couples, Panama, and we are going to kick back at a private island in Panama.
I'm there with you in 2025.
Yes, 2025, we rented another private island. It's in Turtle Island, Fiji. And yeah, Travis, you'll be there.
Yeah, well, Gabe and I'll have a great time there. We'll write you some letters, Mitch.
Yeah, I was looking at my text. I didn't see an invite, but anyway, that's all good.
I think that you both got an invite to Panama.
I think it's true. Yeah.
And it was rejected.
Maybe this podcast episode, we should talk about all things taking action, Mitchell, and not procrastinating.
I liked it.
Because procrastination sort of leaves you behind.
It feels targeted.
Yeah, Mitch said something like, a private island with some other cool couples talking about cool stuff and e-foiling and wake surfing sounds horrible. So,
yeah, I think I thought it was like all guys. Like, you were like, hey, me and 18 other guys are going. I was like, I don't know. Anyway, so
I think I very specifically said like
couples.
Invite couples, your wife.
But maybe it means something different to you, well, Mitch. So, hey, Gabe, I got a question for you.
Yes, sir.
And I'm putting you on the spot. So I know you've been around some badasses the last few weeks. I know Maui. I know who you're with over there. I know in Austin and Dallas. Any big ahas that came out, maybe like current events or just something somebody else was doing that was like, holy shit, I should be applying that into my business. Somebody that's starting out or further ahead, like any, again, not to put you on the spot, but I'm putting you on the spot. What'd you learn?
I've been multiple masterminds, right? And we also have the 0 to 100. And I think that oftentimes I find myself in a room and I put myself in rooms with people that are playing life at a high level. Not just financially, right? Like, there's a lot of people that build wealth out there, but I want to be around people that not just build wealth, but that have amazing relationships with their families, that are out doing cool things, they're healthy, they're experiencing life to the fullest. And, you know, I find that when I'm in a room with high-level players, sometimes it is something that someone says that I'm like, yes, I need to go implement that in my life, in my business in some way. And other times, it's just the energy of being around people that are playing life big that inspires me in a way to think bigger and act bigger. And a lot of times those relationships, and sometimes it can be minimal. Like, I was sharing with one of the guys in the group I was in about the multifamily property and some of the challenges in Oklahoma City. He's like, I got a lender that handles that stuff, that this would be like the perfect fit, you know? And so it's just one conversation, one connection, one idea away from kind of bringing your life to the next level. It's hard to really quantify like, oh, I went to this and here's what happened or here's what I did. But any time that I found myself in a group of people that are one step, 10 steps, 1 year, 10 years ahead of where I want to be, or maybe sometimes I'm helping someone with, maybe I'm 1, 2, 5, 10 steps ahead of where they are, but I feel like there's always opportunities to learn and grow and become a better version of myself when I'm in those situations. And so I continually put myself in those situations, and you know, I really go in a weird way. I go without any expectation, and I usually leave with something. Some of that was the clarity around. I mentioned, you know, I decided to pull out a contract on a deal that I'm in contract with because I got more clear on, you know, really what I'm trying to do and what kind of my next moves in real estate investing is. I have a lot of people that are interested in some of the deals that I have coming to the table that could be potential partners in the future. I don't know. And so I go with an open mind to learn and to connect. And what happens there, we'll see.
I can't stress that enough, man. Two takeaways. One, like, just being around people that are kicking ass, just by association or proximity, you start to believe it's possible, right? And I think that's really important. A lot of people, they might look at what we're doing, or we look at other people and what they've done, and we're like, man, like, that's just like for them. That's not for me, right? And that is, a big mindset hack. If you're around people and they're doing big things, and you're like, that person ties, you know, puts his pants on one leg at a time, or he has to tie his shoe. Like, he's just a human and he's accomplishing big things and he's operating at a high level. And I, you know, I always like, why not me? Why can't I be like that? And then also, yeah, just like, I don't know how many, like, you could do the connection map. You're like, okay, I went to a networking event and I met Mitch, right? And then we went to another networking event and met you. And then through you met a bunch of other badasses that are doing cool things that we've learned a lot of things from, a lot of which are now people are like investors with us, or they might be bringing us in on deals that we really like. And so, yeah, I love that you said that. And I do want to talk about the Wisconsin deal, because the reason you, we talked about this before we went on the air here, and the reason you pulled out of that is really interesting. And it's something we talked about at the Elite Mastermind, ties back to your why. I want to get to that in a second, but Mitch, what have you been up to? So you haven't been in Maui and, you know, Turtle Island and Mars or whatever the hell Gabe's been. You've been in Wisconsin, but you're coming back here to the Columbia, the Pacific Northwest for a couple of days, but for icky reasons.
Yeah, I'd say last year was a big year of travel. We did Spain for a month. We did Maui as well. We had some good trips, but I'm so glad we did that, because this year is really like we're putting everything on hold for fun travel, just because we have some family challenges both on the Wisconsin side and back in Washington. My grandpa's going to be moving and getting some more care, and so I'm going to fly back and help move him. And then we've recently relocated to Wisconsin for my wife's brother, and so it's interesting. Like we talked about this before, cash flow real estate sets you free to do the things either that are bucket list adventures and pretty amazing experiences, but also free to support your family. So my year is kind of like, hey, like how do I support my family? We're dreaming about some trips coming up, talking about, you know, 3 to 6 months in a Spanish speaking country, kind of dreaming, putting together some plans for that, but we don't quite have dates for that. So yeah, I'm in Wisconsin. I'm in the Fox Cities area, relocated out here about 3 months ago. And it's been an interesting experience. Like we picked up, we left in 4 days, we packed the truck, we drove out, got a short-term rental, ended up getting a long-term apartment. And now I'm like, okay, how do I build a network? How do I find awesome deals? How do I build a business in a city that I really haven't spent any time in? And so part of it is like emotionally challenging with the family stuff. But on the business side, I've had a lot of exciting days too, where I'm going, all right, this is a new challenge. I don't know anybody. I don't have any connections. I don't really understand the real estate market out here other than, of course, the fundamentals of real estate. How do I go unlock a ton of value in my backyard, being the Fox Cities at this time, and how I do it quickly? And I think, and Travis, you know, and Gabe too, we've talked about this a lot, like developing the skill of investing and being a good investor, you should be able to go to any city in the country without any contacts and really figure it out relatively quickly. You know, while it's difficult, I'm also looking at it as like a fun challenge. How long until I can go unlock $1 million or put together an awesome project in a place where I don't really know anybody? So that's where I am, man.
And Mitch, I want to just commend you. And I think it's just such a good example. You know, we talk about financial freedom leading to time freedom. And we've all got to do some really neat things in our lives. And you know, you were able to pick up and leave in 4 days to support your family, to be there with your brother and sister-in-law. And it's like that's what real time freedom is about. I mean, I experienced a similar, not a similar scenario, but you know, my dad passed, and when I've talked about this before, 6 years ago, and it's like time freedom to me up until that point was really, I mean, it's about freedom, it's about choices. But a lot of that was geared towards like going and doing cool things, which I think is great. We should all go and experience life to the fullest and do cool things. But I also remember sitting there with my dad, like every day the last 2 weeks before he passed. And I remember thinking like, I am so fortunate. And in fact, there was a lot of gratitude for multiple reasons. One was my mom, my dad, and my wife all lost a parent at either age 12 or 13. And at the time I was 35, and I'm like, you know what? I would love 35 more years with my dad, but I got 35 years with my dad. They lost a parent young. But the other part that I was so grateful for is like, I didn't have to decide between like missing a work and pay to go spend time with my dad. It wasn't, there was no thought there. I created that financial freedom through real estate. And it went from like, hey, going and doing amazing things to being able to spend every day with my dad before he passed. There is no price tag on that. And that may be one of the most valuable things that financial freedom, that time freedom can give you, is that time with the people you care and love. And it's very similar when my wife's stepdad passed away. Like she could be up there visiting and helping in every way she can. We went up there as a family and there wasn't a money restraint. There wasn't a work restraint. We didn't have to choose between going to work or not going to work and spending time with the people we care about. And I think like that piece right there, the fact that you picked up and in 4 days, you took your family across the country so you could spend that physical time, that emotional time with the people you care about, there's nothing more value. And if that doesn't inspire you to go build, you know, financial freedom through real estate, I don't know what will, because I don't know if there's anything more important than those types of relationships and being able to spend time with those people that you care about.
Yeah, man, relationships. I've been thinking a lot about that lately. And if you are, you know, we always talk about the why in elites and, you know, find your why and your why behind the why and what really drives you. And a lot of times, yeah, I want to travel. I want to do cool things. I want to have a lot of fun. But my gosh, like, if you're looking for a good why, like, spending time with the people that you love, your kids, your parents, and man, there's a shelf life on that stuff, and you can't ever get that back. And so I forget who we were talking to when you were telling that story, but someone had to, like, it was a father or a close relative was passing. He had to fly back to his job because they were assholes and wouldn't let him give him the time that he needed. And that's what you want to, like, you know what? And no offense to the W-2ers out there or the employers, but, like, fuck your employer. Like, you know, you lost your dad, you're losing your dad, or you're losing people that are important to you. And if there's not a better why, just to put your middle finger up and say, I'm gonna fucking figure this out. I'm going to figure out time freedom. I'm going to figure out how to do this. And there's no better way to do it through the portfolio of real estate. I always say this about real estate. I'm just kind of talking freely here, but, like, I feel like real estate in the United States is probably one of the biggest equalizers. You know, you could start, and from different points of life, you can start way behind. You can start in poverty. You can be an immigrant and come here. We got our buddy Diego, who came here as and part of the Freedom Crew, and he's just probably a multimillionaire now. And I'm sure he's got time freedom. And so, yeah, man, I love real estate. It's a great equalizer, and that's why we do this. And similar to me, because no one asked, so I'll just volunteer what I did. I was down in Palm Springs for the last couple of weeks, and in December is my mom's birthday and my sister's birthday. We have a house down there, and we flew my mom and my sister down there with my kids and my wife, and just had, like, quality time with them, just spending really, like, quality time with my sister and my mom. And again, like, I work maybe an hour or two a day because I like it. I work on stuff that I like for the most part, unless it's related to Oklahoma City. But for the most part, yeah, I like that. And so what a huge blessing. So let's talk through what's going on in everybody's business life. So Gabe, you had mentioned that we were actually looking at potentially partnering with you on this property, and you said, yep, I'm out. But your reason for getting out was really interesting. Could you elaborate a little bit on this and sort of tie this back to your why and some of the freedoms that we want to talk about? And like, why the hell are we doing this? To make a bunch of money, or are we doing it for other reasons?
Yeah. You know, my why for a long time has been freedom. And I mean, you know, it's not just the financial freedom. It's all the stuff we just talked about.
Sure.
I also enjoy the game. Like, I love playing. I mean, I've had people through the years like, hey, when is enough enough? And it's not about that for me. Like, I love, it's very mentally stimulating for me to a lot of real estate investing is solving a problem or finding a solution to a problem or, you know, getting creative. Like, I think it's partly why once I started buying with seller financing, creative financing, like, it releases some level of creativity. It's almost feels like, I mean, I'm not artistic in any other way. So maybe I'm just convincing myself that I'm a real estate artist or something. I have no idea.
Hey, I like that. That's good. You are absolutely, you are a freelance real estate artist.
I think you are. You're a great real estate artist.
Yeah, that sounds weird, but sure. But I do, I love the process. I love the game. There's a part of me that feels like if I'm not growing, I'm dying. But I also want to take down really solid deals. And so, you know, my last several purchases have been large triple net industrial deals. And triple net, for those that don't know triple net, and there's different variations, but like an absolute triple net deal is where the tenant's responsible for everything. So they're paying maintenance and repairs, they're paying taxes, they're paying insurance, they're covering every cost. So, you know, and I'm sure we'll have an episode where we really dig in on triple net. A lot of the due diligence is on the tenant, how strong's the tenant, how strong are the leases. But what I like about triple net is the income's consistent. And so you've had a good tenant, you make sure the tenant's strong, you make sure the leases are strong, they're covering all the costs, you have very few line items. Here's the income coming in, they're covering all the expenses. So income coming in, you have a mortgage payment if you have a mortgage on the property, and whatever's left over, there's your cash flow. So I purchased, you know, several triple net industrial deals, and I'm in contract on it was a 53,000 square foot medical complex. And the numbers look great. And I'm not saying that this wouldn't be a great purchase, because I still think it's a great product, a great property, but it wasn't triple net, meaning there was high gross income, but the expenses weren't fixed. The expenses would be on me as the owner. So whether we're partners in or not, the income wouldn't be consistent. Prices can go up, and the services and the things that as the owner I'd be responsible for could vary, you know, month to month, year to year. There was a vacancy, which I found out that it was vacant for a year and a half when I previously thought a couple months. And I realized it didn't align with what I wanted. I want to take down big deals. This was a fairly good sized deal, but it didn't align with the simplicity of what I was looking for, which I get in my triple net investments. And so, you know, I made the decision and kind of around the same time, like soon after that, a broker brought me this, what, and I'm digging into it now, this pretty amazing looking absolute triple net deal. And I realized I was so much more excited about that because I could read the numbers in a way that it was just cut and dry. So as long as the tenant's strong, the lease is strong, that triple net deal, I'm looking at that going, this makes way more sense. It's way less complicated than this, you know, gross rent with all these varying expenses that could or could not change. And that's why I chose to back out of that deal. Not saying it wouldn't be a great purchase. I just think it would take up a lot more headspace than some of these other deals that I'm looking at.
The only downside of that new deal, though, is that the tenant's only been in business for 170 years. So that's a little sketchy of a tenant, right?
They've actually been in business 175 years. They've been in the same location.
I'm trying to figure out who this is. Like, they're like started their business in the Civil War or something. What's the... Yeah.
I'll share some time offline. I'm still kind of like digging in, so I don't want to like...
Yeah, I love it.
...share too much. But yeah, they've been in business 175 years. They've been in this location for 115 years.
Goodness.
They're willing to sign a new 20-year lease with 3% rent bumps. And it's absolute triple net. So they would be responsible for maintenance, repair, taxes, insurance. So line item wise, it's like, here's the money coming in. I have to secure financing that supports the deal. And outside of that, it comes down to like, what's my cash on cash? What's the net cash flow of this deal? Now, there are some things to consider, right? Like, could they go bankrupt? This is a 210,000 square foot building. It's on 18 acres. Like, yes, there's a chance, even though they've been in business all that time, and even though they're financially strong and private equity is willing to corporately guarantee the lease, shit could happen. So, you know, there's some due diligence around like, what else could this, if they went bankrupt in the 20-year lease, and if shit hit the fan, what are some other options? So there's still some due diligence. There's still some stuff to look into. But to me, it appears at first glance to be a much cleaner deal and aligned a lot more with what I'm moving towards.
I love how you like think about these deals, because like your Wisconsin deal, like you said, great building, good property, potentially good cash flow. Maybe it's a good deal over time, but like you're really thinking about your why. We talk about your why a lot in the tribe, and especially in Elite, and then like finding assets that really support your why. And then I also like how you said, like, look, there's just all these unknowns, like the complexity of a deal where you're responsible for the expenses or the you know, the maintenance, the CapEx is much different than a true triple net lease. So like, I appreciate that. And Travis and I, in our business, we've had deals where we calculated there was $1 million upside, and we tell this story a lot where we turn it down. It was an RV park we could have built in our hometown, and great opportunity, but we're like, look, like, does it align with our why? Our why is time, lifestyle design. We don't want to be pulling permits and dealing with architects, and we don't want to be developers. And so I love that, like always looking at a deal, but then backing up, looking at it from 30,000 foot and saying, hey, does this support my why? And what is my why? If my why is more time, is this going to support time, or is it going to take away from it?
Yeah. And I think it's probably why you guys prefer a mobile home park with all tenant owned homes and city utilities, right? Because
that's right.
It's just less, there's just less unknowns. I mean, if it's all tenant owned homes at a park, and it's city utilities that, you know, they're all on their own electric meters, like it's a lot easier than, you know, this is a rent to own, this is a park owned home, there's a stick built structure here. I mean, I know my best parks. I have a couple of parks where it's 100% tenant owned homes and city utilities, and they're the easiest parks because there's just less unknowns. So that income is consistency. It is a lot more consistent.
100%.
I'm glad you hit on that, because expenses these days are the name of the game, especially with rising costs. And you mentioned that. I just look at the assets that are in my portfolio, either with Mitch or by myself, and the ones that require the least amount of headspace and time. Headspace is a big one, by the way, right? You might just be laying there worrying about this asset, not doing anything, but the headspace is a huge opportunity cost. I've been dealing with that for the last year with this Oklahoma City property, and it's really hurt me. I can't imagine the millions of dollars I've lost because I've been so like worried and in scarcity mindset, or like, if I didn't have that, I could have probably gone out and taken down more assets. But the assets in my portfolio that are the easiest to manage, Yeah, all tenant-owned home parks, public utilities. That's one of them with, that we do with Mitch. I like self-storage. We're talking about it on the Marathon Mastermind, the elite call before that. If you have a good manager in place, because the expenses you're dealing, you're dealing with, you know what, 10 walls and a light. You're not dealing with pipes and plumbing. And also, like, I do have an old building, because you'd mentioned that building is really old, but I do have an old building in my hometown, but it's all triple net. And then I have an A-class sixplex. That one's easy because it's all been remodeled, so the expenses are low. But then you go back to some of the C-class multifamily stuff that we got into. Every day, man, I'm having to wire money every day. And that's cash flow just the wrong way. And it's just, when you're dealing with 200 apartments and 200 toilets and 200 hot water heaters and 200 HVAC systems, it's constant. And so I would encourage everybody that's listening to this right now to really think about your why. And if you're listening to this and if you've read our book, you're probably thinking about time freedom. And if you want time freedom, be mindful of the assets that you pick. Because I see this in business and I see this in investors. They get shiny object syndrome. They run around and, I can make money there. Or if I'm a business, I can bring on that customer. That'd be a great customer because I'll make a lot of money, but they end up just sucking the time and life out of themselves. So it's soul sucking.
Travis, you said a really important thing I want to iterate on just really quickly. Like, the expense line grows very quickly during times of inflation. And unless you're able to, compensate that with that via the revenue, rent increases or other revenue sources, then you suffer greatly. And like the apartment world, yeah, people can make really good money in the apartment world, and people do every day. But also, like, a lot of people who couldn't increase their revenue in a tangible way have really suffered in this last run-up of inflation because their expense line, which happens to be a lot of expenses on a big apartment complex, there's a lot more expense lines than there are revenue lines. And when inflation hits and all the prices go up, whether it's turn costs, labor, materials, management, insurance, what utilities, that really hurts apartments versus you think about like a triple net, what expenses are going to go up during inflation? Not a whole lot because they're passed on to the tenants. Same with a mobile home park that's all TOH. You have four or five expense lines. So the impact of inflation on an MHP or a true triple net lease are going to be less impactful than a business where you, as the owner, are responsible for a lot of those expense lines. And then secondly is, like, just to, say it out loud, like, our government brings in a certain amount of capital. They spend a lot more capital and the delta is printed. And it's year after year, and it's not a theory. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's how they run the operation. So we know that we will consistently have some level of inflation. Will it be 2% or 3% or 8%? It's hard to tell what that will be, but consistently the value of the dollar is going down. And so I would just caution anybody, be aware of that and realize when you take on a lot of expense lines, you are more subject to the effects of inflation.
Or it comes down to control. If you can't control the expenses, I hear, you just briefly hit on it. Let's talk about insurance. My Lord, like, there's insurance in some markets are doubling or quadrupling.
Right.
And there's not a damn thing you can do about it. And there goes all your cash flow. And there goes your value to the tune of millions.
100%. Yeah.
And so, yeah, we're seeing that across. I don't know if you guys are seeing that.
These are all the same reasons why when I look at that Madison, Wisconsin deal, even though there's a lot to love about the deal, and I think there's a lot of meat on the bone, I still think there's so many, because all those things, all those costs that could go up, most of those are out of my control. So, there's things that you can do on a lot of properties to decrease expenses, and there may be some, but when I look at the historical expenses, they haven't typically gone down, they've gone up. And so, even though the value of the property may go up, if my expenses can go up at a faster pace than maybe the rent can, and that's not necessarily the case, but there's just so many of those are out of my control where I don't want it to be left to the unknown. I think it just leaves a lot of room for mistakes and to hurt the return.
Yeah, and triple net, man, we don't talk about that enough. There's lenders out there lenders love triple net too. Like, they, for the very, probably the very same reasons you like it.
Yeah, they underwrite. They also, the lenders typically underwrite the deal pretty heavily too, because they want to know where their money's going. Who are you as the investor? Where is the asset? What is the asset? Who the hell is the tenant? Or do they know what they're doing? What kind of income are they producing at their business? How long have they been doing that? Do they look like they're increasing every year, staying steady? Are they losing income? So they underwrite as well.
I love how we're talking about control too. That word, I think, is important because we talk about this a lot in 0 to 100 units. The book, which is live on Amazon. You like that plug?
We're number one in the new release list for a day or two.
Yeah, it was like our first book, and we were beating Dave, was it Schmamzy? I can't remember what the, anyway, so.
Dave who? Never heard of the guy.
Yeah, well, it is what it is.
I may or may not have a picture of us up higher on the list than him. I don't know.
I've got it. I took a bunch of those. I screenshotted them, so yeah, I'm weird that way.
We all did.
We talk about control a lot, though. In the book, we talk about control in Elite, and one of the first things is, like, we talk about getting out of the four units and below, right? Because we can force appreciate with five units and above, or commercially zoned property. But then, like, there's different levels of control depending on what asset class or what asset type you buy above that five units. So it's interesting how, like, in our investing careers, we're all sort of talking about this same concept. Like, you know, you talked about, like, getting out of the Wisconsin deal because you're like, well, there's so many things I can't control. And when you can't control things in an asset, you can't control the wealth of that asset or the cash flow of that asset. I love the topic. It's like, we're all in the commercial space. We can all control via forced appreciation, but now we're looking for greater levels of control because we all know that when we have control over the asset, we have control over our wealth and our cash flow. So just kind of pointing that out.
Well, not to mention the velocity of capital. I mean, we talk about that a lot in the book too, but like there's two types of appreciation, right? There's hope appreciation. I buy a house, I hope it appreciates, right? Or if I buy an asset that I know damn well.
Not a strategy, by the way.
Right, not a strategy.
Right.
But if I buy an asset that I know I can appreciate within a conservative margin of error, and I can force appreciate that asset quickly, and then I can refinance it, and I can pull equity back out, by the way, tax-free, because it's debt. Be responsible. Sorry, Dave Ramsey. Be responsible with your debt. Make sure you've got good debt coverage, and you're not a jackass like so many people were over the last, you know, few years. But if you can do that, and you can return capital back to yourself, but still hold the asset, and you can go deploy that again, with forced appreciation, the next step is the velocity of capital, which is how you can scale quickly. So there's a scale tip for you.
That's a great scale tip. I mean, I'll speak on that a little bit because I'm in the process right now of selling some properties. I don't buy anything banking on appreciation. I know equity happens. Like, over time, equity happens. Cash flow allows you to hold the property, right? And maybe some of that force appreciation allows you to create an opportunity to refi, pull money out, sell a property. Whatever. You know, scaling is always an interesting discussion. We talk about a lot, you know, 0 to 100. I'm in the process of selling some of my smaller properties. They've served me really well, but I constantly look at my portfolio, and not that I sell often, but when I do, it's strategic. So right now, you know, I'm looking to build up my liquidity. I've deployed a lot of capital. I'm looking to deploy more capital into larger deals. I want to do less deals, but bigger deals. So I look at my portfolio and I think, where do I have, you know, large amounts of equity where the cash flow, even if good, it has served me for a lot of years, and now it's time to move on. And so I've recently listed a single family, a duplex, two triplexes, a four unit, a six unit. I'm getting offers quickly. It's pretty interesting to see that in this market, but they're priced right. And it's an opportunity that I'm not going to go and just to blow all those funds. I'm going to put that money into deals that are going to return me a much higher return than what I'm getting now on that current asset. I've been able to hold those assets for a long period of time because the cash flow has allowed me to hold them. And now I'm in a great position to decide, you know, hey, I can sell these. And if I don't, I still have a good asset that's going to keep serving me, you know, month after month. But the fact is, my return on equity on some of these are extremely low. And so I'm looking at my portfolio through a different lens now. What aligns with my why now? What aligns with, you know, what I'm looking to do, what I want my portfolio to look like? And for me, you know, having been doing this almost 20 years now, it does make sense to me now to sell some of these smaller assets and put into larger deals.
And what's interesting is a lot of people miss this point, and right, and well, they miss two points. And I think, you know, as cash flow investors, we buy on cash on cash, right? We look on cash on cash return when we go in. We want to know how hard our money is working for us as we go in. So cash on cash is simple, right? Like, what's the cash flow you're taking home annually divided by what did you put into the property? We'll spit out a percentage. Now, we sell on cash on equity, or at least we should sell on cash on equity or refinance on cash on equity. And a lot of people miss this. I talk to a lot of people who are going, oh, well, I own a lot of real estate, but my cash flow is really low. And I'm like, well, what about refining? What about selling or 1031 tax deferred exchange? Or what about, and they're like, well, I just want to hold it forever. I don't want to take on more debt. But you look at their cash on equity and they're at like 1.5%. Like, they're 3 or 4 points below the money market account, right? Which is not where you want to be. And so I think, as a seasoned investor, and especially where you are, Gabe, where you've had a long time to build up a lot of equity, like, looking at the COE, the cash on equity, is really important. And then repurposing that cash and getting it working harder for you is also really important. And tons of people miss that step. We, in the Elite Mastermind, we often go over people's personal situations and we're going, hey, look, this is getting 2% equity, cash on equity, or this is getting 3% cash on equity. And like, how do we go beat that? And like, I know Travis has a really good example of moving equity out of a duplex where he was getting, you know, what was it, $1,200 or something? And then you moved it into like
800.
Yeah, 800. And then what were you getting afterwards after you moved it? 35 or
2,400.
And so same equity, different asset, way different cash flow.
3x the cash flow.
Who wouldn't trade $800 for $2,400?
You would do it any day of the week.
Well, it was my first deal with Mitch. So I was a little, you know, I had a lot of thinking to do because I didn't know if Mitch aligned with my why. And I'm still trying to figure that out. But
how'd it work out for you?
The return on equity, right? Like I probably have shared this on past podcasts or I know in conversation, but I have a friend, Jeremy Taylor, who, you know, a mentor of his mentioned to him and he shared this on a call once. He said a mentor of his asked him, if you could get 10 years worth of cash flow in one day, you should consider selling the property. That's really stuck with me. And I love that. And it's not a set all be all like rule, but I started looking at my portfolio going, hey, even though these things are decent cash flow, and even though I did some of these low money down seller finance deals, so my return's infinite, I start looking at my portfolio going, oh my gosh, some of these I'm getting way more than 10 years of cash flow if I were to sell this thing. It's just a very, very easy metric to at least look at your portfolio and go, gosh, 10 years of cash flow, if I sell today, what can I put that into that's gonna return me such a higher return? And that's really the velocity of money, the velocity of equity. And sometimes it's just phantom equity. It's like you're building wealth almost out of the thin air just because you made the decision to buy cash flowing property on good fundamentals and hold it for long enough where the equity happened.
Love it.
Well, yeah, we talk about the R1 framework, which is a big part of 0 to 100, and 0 to something is like get out and do something. There's a lot of reasons for that to get notoriety and to get experience, but more importantly, you're building some equity. And when you build equity, you can tap that equity and get a much higher cash on equity and also buy assets that now align with your why. Like these quads or duplexes don't necessarily align with what you want. You want large industrial triple net properties with solid fundamentals, good cash flow, good tenants, you know. So I think it's really important. And it's funny whenever we go through that. I mean, there's people that we talk to that have been in the real estate game for a long time. And when we have that cash on equity and we like, it's like their mind gets blown. They're like, oh my God, I never thought about that. Like I've got these assets with a ton of equity.
I mean, it's not something I looked at for a long time.
Yeah.
And I'm actually okay with it, right? Because I really focus on building wealth versus making money. And I wonder if I would have looked at that through the lens early on, I would have sold more stuff. I don't know, right? But I actually like that I learned about this and started looking at it later because it was kind of like, oh shit, this is so obvious. There's all this equity here. What could I do to maximize return? And what could I purchase that aligns with my why today or my goals today or what it is that I'm trying to accomplish through real estate today? So
right. And also you mentioned that get 10 years worth of cash flow. Like the time value of money is really important. For a few reasons. One's a financial reason. You know, your internal rate of return is much higher when you get a dollar today is worth a hell of a lot more than a dollar in 10 years, right? So the time value of money is also important, but it's also like your life. Like we're not guaranteed to live to tomorrow. Like, and if you can then reshuffle equity into assets that can get you closer to R1 or beyond or whatever it is you're shooting for, why wait for 10 years? But yeah, I agree. There's a balance and there's no right answer to it, but it's definitely something that I think a lot of people don't really think through. One last sort of tactical question for you. Are you just cashing out? Are you doing a 1031 exchange? I guess that's a question. Those two answers, one of those two.
Yeah. I am not doing a 1031. I've done a lot of 1031s when I've sold property. I have a lot of accelerated depreciation carrying over to offset any gain. I have, you know, a lot of liquidity events coming up that it's going to put me in a good position, but I've planned for that and I've tax planned for that accordingly. And so I have a lot of depreciation carrying over to offset any of those gains so that it will not be a true taxable event for me. Otherwise, I would 1031.
I love it. Hey, Mitch, what's new in your business?
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, I know what's new in your business. I talk to you every day.
Yeah, aren't we in the same business? You know, as far as deals go, we found an awesome property in Wisconsin.
Yeah, it's great. It's not triple net, though, but it's a great deal. It's 5,300 square feet.
It's not a medical building, is it?
Someone just fell out of contract just the other day.
Oh, that's weird. That's weird. I should have flipped it to you.
This is the first deal we found through Ringless voicemail, actually. I've never deployed that. I was working with a friend of mine. And he was like, look, like, let me go run it for you and we'll see what we find. Usually more relational or to the seller or to the, you know, through a broker. But this was neat. I got to connect with a landowner directly and put together a pretty fun deal. So 50 units with potential for a lot more units. We're going to kind of test the demand after we purchase it. All TOH, paved roads, city utilities, you know, everything's built back. Like very, rents are below market, pretty clean park, an extra 10 acres that's sort of used as a farm right now, but will be potentially, you know, a new development there. And so, or we could potentially put more units in there depending on demand. So like, it's like a textbook deal. I mean, it's pretty awesome to, you know, come into to move to Wisconsin, start looking for value and go and unlock this thing. So I'm pretty excited about this deal and then just looking for more. There's a lot of awesome parks in my area that I've gone, either drove by and talked to managers or sellers or just give them a call. And so I'm in deal mode right now, you know, just looking for value.
Mitch, give us a little. So I've never done ringless voicemail. I'm familiar with it. Ringless voicemail, they get a voicemail that you leave them. And so I'm assuming they called you back.
Yeah. So like kind of how it worked was a buddy of mine who, you know, has kind of a small marketing company. He ran the voicemail. I didn't want to have any calls back or, you know, deal with that. So he sort of filtered them, talked to a couple different people, or multiple people, ended up talking with this particular seller and was like, look, this might be a good deal. I think what's interesting is like once you know, with an RVM or a letter or a cold call, like the very first thing, the hurdle you got to get over is trust, because they don't know who you are. And like, I know I'm a good person. I know I do good business, but like
debatable.
The seller, yeah, I knew that was coming. The seller doesn't. And so like, which by the way, there's a lot of like, you know, bad things going on out there where like, I understand her hesitancy. So one of my biggest hurdles first was like, how do I get through to her that like, and show that I'm a real person, that we do real business. And so I spent a lot of time talking with her, you know, getting a hold of her attorney, sending, you know, a proof of funds and a bio, who we are and what we do. And that's where having some key assets in place, like a business website and the bio put together, and those things can be valuable. So that was my first hurdle. And then the second was just like really understanding like what was the deal, mom and pop seller. So no P&L, like building that P&L. We call that like a shoebox deal when it's just like looking through receipts of a shoebox basically. And so building out the P&L and understanding the deal and then understanding the market. And so it's been an interesting experience to find a deal in that way. I think deals can be found anywhere. I think, and we were talking about this on the Elite call before recording this podcast, is like, it's not necessarily where you find them, in my opinion. It's the sauce is like the conversations, the building a relationship, building rapport. How do you negotiate? Like, how are you approaching the deal? And for me, I'm very, very kind. I want to know the seller's needs truly, so I can craft an offer that meets their needs as well as our own. Like that's my approach. And I want to build a relationship as fast as I can with folks, even if I just met them. So long-winded answer.
So now you're in contract on the property. How are you guys financing into this property? What's that structure look like?
Oh, it's something you probably haven't heard about, Gabe. Let me tell you about it. It's called a seller's note.
Oh,
okay. Write that down, buddy. It's a seller's note.
It sounds like a unicorn.
Yes.
Says Travis to the king of seller financing. Yeah. Yeah, we're seller financing. She, you know, this is interesting actually, because when I first spoke with her, she said she wants to be cashed out. I said, look, would you consider seller financing? She goes, absolutely not. I don't want to be cashed out. And of course, my initial reaction is like, hey, no problem. Okay, well, we can put that together. 2 or 3 days later, I've asked her some questions. We've had some good conversations. Built more of a rapport. I called her up because I love seller financing. I think it's the best financing out there.
Absolutely.
Amen.
You can be really creative. It's non-recourse. In other words, they're not coming after other assets other than the underlying asset. Like in my mind, there's nothing better than seller financing. So I went back to her about 2 or 3 days later and just said, hey, look, like I know, first of all, I recognize you do not want to do seller financing. I'd like to put some notes together on what that would look like if you did consider it. I'll just put it in an email and send it over to you, so you can just take a look at what that would look like. And she goes, okay. And so that's what I did. I sent her some notes and just said, look, this is what it could look like with interest rate and a down payment and that, you know, all the terms. And she came back and she goes, hey, I really want to do seller financing. I didn't talk her into it. I just made sure we kept the conversation open and gave her some options.
Are you at a place where you can share price, terms, and all that?
Yeah. So we're 1.25 for the park. We're going in 600 down. So we're going pretty heavy down. We'll do 3 years, 5% IO, and then we'll refi out.
That's interest only for those of you that don't know what IO is.
Yeah, interest only. You know, it's a good deal.
3 years IO.
That's right.
And then is that when the notes due also in 3 years?
Yes.
Like we're going in with a lot of cash. I think that's the down payment is high. It's almost 50%, just under 50%. But the way that we have it structured and the nature of the deal is that we're able to force appreciate the deal, return all of capital plus more, probably 120% to investors at year three. So
118 to be exact. Per my pro forma.
118. We have some pretty good upside in the park. There's also some value add things we can do. There's kids in the park. There's no playground. So we plan on putting a playground in as well as potentially a little area where people can gather, like community center, barbecue area, like some things that are just some pretty easy value add, but things that'll matter for tenants as we increase rents towards market. And so it's a great deal. We're pretty happy with it.
The cool part about that is, I mean, the rents are pretty far below market. And we always talk about, you know, ways to drive value, and bringing rents closer to market adds an easy $1 million of upside to this particular property in a very short period of time. So you talk about velocity of capital, return capital back to investors. We split some of that upside and we can go do it again, but hold the asset and benefit from cash flow forever, which is pretty cool. There's also 20 some pads that we can finish to either anywhere from 25 to 75% ready to go. We can finish those pads and then start bringing in homes to sell. The seller had done that before us and had a lot of success. There's a lot of demand for affordable housing out there. So there's a lot of infill. And then there's the 10 acres that come with it. Like, oh, by the way, let's just throw in 10 acres. Right now, there's just like a farmer farming it. But that could be something if the demand, you know, you could put a couple homes in, they sell. If it works, you get good residents, good tenants. And that's something that we can, you know, maybe do five. And then we do another five. And man, with mobile home parks, dude, getting into the infill game, we always look at it as sort of like cherry on the cake, but if you can do that, you can drive a hell of a lot of value pretty quickly. That's great. What else is going, Mitch? Yeah, by the way, good job finding that deal. That was the sweet little park. So for those of you that are thinking that there are no deals out there to be had, we just told you two really interesting deals that will generate really good cash flow. They meet the fundamentals. That's good. So good job, bud. Good job, Mitch. Good job, little guy.
Oh, I appreciate that. That was a nice pat on the back.
Yeah.
Well done, you tiny little insignificant person. Anyway, moving on.
Was that condescending? Was that a little condescending? Oh, okay, good.
You guys can hear that, right? You hear the tone. Yeah.
Well done, little guy.
Thanks, Gabe. But what else is going on in your business that you want to share?
I think within Cadia, we were able to hire an amazing, or I should say partner with an amazing CEO in our business this year. That's a huge, you know, it's a 10x move. And so she's coming in. She's really, really systemizing the business. She's 10 times what we are for operations or more. And so that's taking a lot of weight off our shoulders so we can focus on the right things. But also it's like, it's twofold. Like the operations are really, really important and she's really taking that to the next step, but also like she's driving growth. And so we're talking about potentially a fund model, putting together some thesis around buying larger parks and adding, you know, putting together some value add plans and how to like really, really push Cadia to the next level. And again, like we're lifestyle guys. So it's funny because we want growth. We want to build castles, but we don't want to spend all of our time doing it. And so bringing in and partnering with our CEO has been like a massive step, and she's freeing up our time, but also giving us a capacity to grow. So I think that's another pretty fun update.
That's a good point. Like I think a lot of like we got to where we're at by buying more lighter lift type properties. We're lazy repositioned in the book and with the Elite program. It's like, how can you do NOI, net operating income enhancements to drive a lot of value, but without killing your time? Like we were talking about earlier on the podcast here. Could these be a little bit heavier lifts? Maybe there's like, we're talking about taking these parks and really elevating them to where they're more of a premium park. Yes, it's a heavier lift, but we've got the crews to do. We got the people to do it. So it still really is passive for us.
I go back to that example of not buying the RV park or the land to develop an RV park. And like, you think about it, if we had a full team in place that's what they do, then you could still technically have lifestyle design and go unlock that value. But at the time it was Travis and I, and we're going, look, like we want to scale without killing ourselves. So I think it depends on like where you are in the cycle. What does your team look like? Can you take on bigger projects? Today, we can take on pretty big projects versus a year or two ago would have killed us. And so, yeah, it just depends on what team you have in place.
Awesome. Well, since nobody asked, I'll share what's going on in my business.
I was hoping we could skip over that because it's just...
I just assumed Mitch was speaking for the both of you since you guys are in business together. I didn't know if you...
I did too. I thought I had I thought I hit the major updates. Is there anything else you're doing out there, big buddy?
I've been talking to my partnership attorney. and we're going to go through the operating agreements of our business. And
our attorney?
My attorney will call your attorney. Oh, it's the same attorney. Never mind.
Travis tries to sue me every Tuesday, by the way. So this is just another Tuesday.
You made me mad. I'm going to sue you.
He'll calm down by Thursday.
Right.
It's just weekly.
Right. Yeah. Other sort of things to share. I got two appraisals back. For those of you that are wondering like where values are at, and one was this 150 unit. The appraisal came in really strong. Gabe, I shared that with you because I know you have an apartment complex in Oklahoma City. So that was a really good news. And then I just got another appraisal back on my mixed use historic building here. And that came back way higher than I thought. I bought that for 2.6 a couple years ago, not even 2 years ago. And now the appraisal came in at 3.7, although I did put $500,000 in. So appraisals are looking good. I think the property in Oklahoma City that a lot of you are familiar with is pretty much done with construction. And now we're just having lease up. We've had some management turnover with the property management company, not just some, like quite a bit. Class C apartment buildings can be tough and you need a really, really good manager. I'll tell you that right now. If you're going to go, sometimes you're going to be looking at Class C apartment buildings. For those of you that don't know what Class A, B, C, D, A being like your luxury apartments with amenities and pools and workout facilities and built, you know, within the last 5 years, B being more 90s and 80s vintage, C and D plus being more, these are at, they were a D when I got them. Now they're probably in the C realm. You can look at the pro formas, like things could look good. Cash on cash could look good. But my gosh, like understand the management piece. Cause if you don't have a good manager in there, I'm on like management number 4, I think at this point for over the last 12 months. So management's important, but it's coming along and I'm going to be out there with Gabe in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. The month. It's going to be a quick trip. I'll be out there for 2 days. That's my length of stay in Oklahoma City these days.
Yeah, you want to get in. And for those of you that are living in Oklahoma, I don't mean to offend you, but you want to get in and get out as quickly as you can. So is there anything else you guys want to share that is enlightening for the rest of the crew here or the audience?
I don't know if it's enlightening or not specific to my story or what I'm doing, but like within 0-100, Travis, you talked about the framework a couple times on the call here. And like, I want to just speak to that really quickly. Like the framework, when we talk about the framework, we're talking about 75 to 100 steps. We're actually just completing this that people can follow to scale. One of the things we realize is like scale for us came over a number of years and a number of steps and a number of mistakes, by the way. And so what we're doing is we're really mining, we're really going back in time and saying, okay, what do we do right? What do we do wrong? And we're documenting that. And so one of the things I think that's really exciting about like the Lead Mastermind, for example, is like we take the book, we take our stories, we take all these, you know, these assets that we combine it into this framework where people can follow. And it's pretty powerful. And so we're just kind of putting the bow on the framework now where people can come in and say, hey, like, for example, I have 4 or 5 units. I've been beating my head against the wall trying to scale. I don't really understand how to find big deals. I don't understand how to analyze or unlock value. Yeah, I'm listening to the podcast. I can speak the language and sort of understand what you're saying, but like, what do I do? What's my step-by-step sort of like, what's the framework? What do I need to do next? I think there's some confusion around scale. And at 0-100, like our whole thing is like, to make scale easy for you, to take the mystery out of scale. And so I talk about that framework because it's new. It's something that we're just buttoning up and we're pretty excited about it.
Yes. And if you're so inclined, go check out our book. We're excited about it. If you're also so inclined, give us a nice review. It helps us. Well, there we go. 1 hour gone. Just the three of us just chatting about life and real estate. Sometimes we don't need our calls to be super scripted. And sometimes we are the guests. Hope you guys got a lot of value out of that. Appreciate every one of you. And stay tuned for those in the live audience. Join us next week, every Tuesday at noon Pacific Standard Time. And we'll keep talking real estate, all about scaling to R1 and getting time freedom. Again, time freedom. Notice I didn't say financial freedom, time freedom.
All right, guys. Now go out there and buy some real estate.
Do it.
Do it.